हरिः
ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
Do we go through this thing on Nitya? Nitya Namitik? This is Sahidan.
Is it what?
Do we go through this whole thing on the Nitya and
Namitik? I wasn't here for the last class.
Not much reading.
So maybe we just read this one paragraph. So I don't remember reading more than that. Now let us consider, how are the words nitya, eternal, and naimittika, temporary, used here with the word karma? If we consider the deep meaning of the scriptures, we will see that these two words do not refer to the supreme spiritual goal of life. The terms are used with ordinary or material meaning. Words like nitya karma, nitya tattva, and nitya sattva may be applied only to the soul's pure spiritual position. They cannot be used to refer to anything else. Therefore, when the word nitya is used to modify the word karma and that the word karma, that nitya karma is singling of the material world, indirectly refers to the eternal spiritual reality. The karma in the material world is never eternal. When karma is employed in karma yoga leads to the search for jnana, knowledge. And that search leads to bhakti, devotional service. Yeah, this is what we did. This. Then that karma and jnana may be called nitya because they lead to something that is actually nitya. Therefore, a Brahman's chanting of the Gayatri Mantra is called anitya karma because even though it is an activity in relationship to the material body, it does have an oblique reference to the path of devotional service. Therefore, these things may be called nitya, even though in themselves they are not really nitya. Such a usage is called upachar, figure of speech. The word nitya karma can be applied truthfully only to Krishna prema, pure love for Krishna. The word nitya karma can be applied truthfully only to the realm of the spirit. When the activities of the material world are used for advancement in spiritual life, those activities may be called nitya karma. There is nothing wrong with that usage. However, one who sees the truth does not call these activities nitya, eternal. He prefers to call them naimittika, temporary. It is not really true that the words nitya karma and naimittika karma may refer to materialistic activities. In truth, the eternal nature of the soul is purely spiritual. The religion that describes the pure soul is the real eternal religion. All other religions are temporary. Varnashram Dharma, Astanga Yoga, Shankhya, and austerities are all temporary. If an individual's spirit soul is not bound by Maya, there is no need for him to follow any of these paths. These temporary religions are meant only for souls bewildered by Maya. All these religions are intended for certain specific circumstances. Therefore, the truth is that they are all temporary. The whole idea is that sadhana bhakti, means that you're dealing with the conditioned nature. The conditioned nature then is we have it, we are conditioned by it, we have to work with it. And so therefore, then the opportunity is given that they are connected to Krishna consciousness. They're connected to Krishna. So in this way, then we will say it is nitya. So you'll always get two definitions. When you're seeing it, that its purpose is nitya, therefore it is also called nitya. You know, just like cutting sabji is also called cooking. But if you get very technical about it, cutting sabji is not cooking. Only when things are in the pot, on the fire, then you can actually call it cooking. Like that. Because if you stop after cutting the sabji, it's not cooked. Right? So cooking starts there. But it's preliminary. It means if the sabji is uncut, it has to be cut. Because when you say, I'm going to cook something, means you're going to take it, put it in the pot, and cook it. But if it's not in a state that it can be done like that, it can't be cooked, then it has to be prepared so it can be cooked. So that's what sadhana bhakti is. Sadhana bhakti means that we are not on the platform of devotion. We are attached to the body, connected to the body. So therefore we take the body and the gross and subtle bodies and we engage in Krishna service. By that way, then we become purified. We come to the platform where we're actually on the platform of the pure soul. Then at that point, then we seriously begin the process of devotional service. But actually, until we develop love for Krishna, because devotion means that there's attachment to Krishna, then it's really called. So therefore, like same like he's giving here, is that therefore you can call it nitya karma, like this. But at the same time, is from another point of vision, it's nainitic, it's temporary, because the soul doesn't belong in the material world. So when it's connection to Krishna, then it's called nitya, because it's in the pursuance of nitya. But once the perfection of that has been attained, one is not doing it anymore. Therefore, one is working within the spiritual realm, so it's not therefore called nitya. Does that make sense?
I think there was a reference to the Sandhya Vandana. Yeah. As being,
it could be called nitya, but it's dealing with the body of the Brahman, because he has a brahminical conditioned nature. He's getting that mantra. If he had a shudra brahminical nature, shudra conditioned nature, he wouldn't get it. But so it's not based on the soul. That's why you call it nitya, because it is dealing with spiritual. But the only reason someone has it is because of the material situation. So when that changes, like they change body, they're not chanting anymore. The next life, then they'll have to receive it again. So technically, you can't call it nitya.
And what about japa then?
Japa, that's a different thing.
The animals don't have it, but we have it, and when we change our bodies, we'll have to.
That's an eternal.
But that's connect. See, the Gayatri for the Brahmana means he is worshipping the sun. Like that. That's the thing. But for the devotees, then they are seeing it in connection to Krishna. So then, in that way, then it becomes part of the Pancharatrik system rather than the Varnashram system. Here he's talking Varnashram. The question was on Varnashram.
Mm-hmm.
So we're following Pancharatrik, which basically means the Bhagavat Marg that's put formalized. Because Bhagavat is Rag, and when it becomes Vaidhi, then it's called Pancharatrik. Because Bhagavat, there is no Vaidhi. Like that. There is, we see in Vaikuntha, but, so then it will also look like Varnashram and Pancharatra, all those things. But for us, it's for them it would be, it's rules and regulations will follow there, and they're conscious of everything, the Lord themselves, how they should behave. But in the material world, people aren't conscious, so they have to learn like that. So the Varnashram and the Pancharatra will be a process by which they learn the eternal Vaidhi of the spiritual realm. But for us, then it basically means it takes more the flavor of the Bhagavat put into Vaidhi. Therefore you see is that within it then we have two aspects, the Vaidhi sadhana and Raganuga sadhana. Though externally they both look the same, the rules the same, the activities the same. But the idea is that one changes the consciousness on why one's doing it. It means rules and regulations, you're doing it because Krishna's God. And the scriptures say you should do like this, so that's pious, and that's right. And if you do it like that, it's good, and if you don't do it like that, you'll get a reaction. So that is the inspiration for following. Like that. And also for those who are in the Vaikuntha, that'll be the beginning. Later, they will do it because they know it pleases the Lord. He's God. and it pleases him. So they'll come to that Nishkam platform. So they're not worried about going to hell and all that so much. They're worried that it just pleases the Lord. But still, he's God, that's why we're doing it. But for the residents of Vrindavan, then it takes a different flavor. Because then it does the same thing, it changes more dramatically to wanting to do it for Krishna, but not because he's God. Because he's, you know, the person that we want to please. Like that, he's the most attractive person. It's, you know, it's just our natural, you know, it's just the natural attraction of the soul. So then it takes on a different flavor. So that's why it goes beyond then Vaikuntha. Right. Okay. So here the Brahmins, meaning, because he's mentioning the best of all social classes. Here we're taking it as Brahmin means Vaishnava. So then it goes into the Pancharatrik system. Because for us, actually, see, there's a difference in Gayatris. There's a Brahma Gayatri and then the Pancharatrik Gayatris. Technically speaking, we don't have basically the qualifications or the right to chant the Brahma Gayatri. But if someone surrenders to the devotional process according to Pancharatra, then one can receive the Pancharatrik mantras. And because one has chanted and received those, then by that you've developed the qualification, you've changed body. It means those who are Brahmins, they can receive the Brahma Gayatri. So then, you know, so mixed castes especially, means a Shudra can't get it, mixed castes definitely can't get. So then by the Pancharatrik you change body. And because it's Vaishnav is the, you know, the pursuit, that's automatically Brahman. So therefore, the Vaishnava is automatically Brahman. Therefore, then they can receive the Brahma Gayatri. With that. So it's not necessary, but Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur to establish the point that the Vaishnavas are minimum to be accepted as Brahmins. They're beyond Brahmins, but at least minimum. Therefore, then he introduced the Brahma Gayatri to those who didn't have it just by their natural social standing. Because otherwise, before that, is those Vaishnavas from Brahmin families, if they had received it, you know, according to their family tradition, they would chant it. They would wear Brahmin thread and they would chant it. And those that didn't, they didn't bother. They just chanted the Pancharatrik Gayatris and didn't wear threads. Like that.
In ISKCON, it seems to be the standard that everyone should get second initiation. Oftentimes, devotees who don't have qualities of cleanliness and austerity and steadfastness and attachment to sadhana also receive it because it seems a necessity. And even the argument that unless you're initiated, you can't go back to Godhead. I don't know where it comes from, but it's also there, whether it's valid or not. Can you comment on that?
Well, that question was asked to Prabhupada. He said everybody doesn't have to get second. Because the chanting is enough. See, the other is helpful. It's an important thing, but if one doesn't have the qualifications, one won't be able to make it work. You know? That's the thing, is that it's useful, but if you don't have the qualities to make it work, it's not like the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That's why one has to distinguish between Maha Mantra, which is Bhagavat, Pancharatrik Mantras, which are Pancharatrik, and Brahma Gayatri, which is Vedic. And the systems are different. The qualifications are different. So, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra works even if you chant it derisively. It will purify you, it will uplift you. Pancharatrik Gayatris and the Vedic Gayatris won't. You're pure, they work. You're not pure, they don't work. It's that simple.
Is there an offense that if someone doesn't have some minimal qualifications, that the mantra will be upset with them? Or?
It means it's something to consider. One of the aspects of the ninth offense is to preach to the faithless. It means to initiate unqualified persons. Like that. It may be that specifically you're doing it to increase the followers or increase one's income. Like that. So that's definitely. But here, it's like,
they should be in knowledge of what's going on. Main thing is the process should be understood. So the point is it's just like, if it's so important, then why is it when the first day someone walks in the door, they're not immediately given second initiation? If it's so important for advancement, people will say, no, they're not qualified yet. So then they have to understand what is the qualification for second, and then they will consider whether after 6 months they're automatic. Because they probably gave after 6 months, yeah. You know. But at the same time, there's so many things Prabhupada did are not done now. You know, like if a senior man falls down, Prabhupada would put him right back into that senior position. And now that's highly unpopular. You know, he said the rest of his life walk around with one of those, you know, cat of nine tails flailing himself, you know, walking from, you know, place to place. You know, I mean, so, you know, it's a totally mundane approach. So we're following on that, then yes, but then we should follow on all those things. You know? So the point is that there's a need to understand the process. Like that. The Hare Krishna mantra is enough. But at the same time, is if it has the pancharatrik, it's helpful. But the pancharatrik won't work unless cleanliness and all these other things are there. At least the pursuit of it.
Prabhupada also made some very heavy comments in Chaitanya Charitamrita about unqualified people taking Gayatri, in particular in relation to Kama Gayatri. And he says that those who are unqualified and take this mantra, they'll be chasing after the opposite sex and luxury without money rather than Krishna.
Yeah. Very heavy
comment.
Yeah, because it fulfills desire. Therefore, it's called kama. But the thing is you're once supposed to have spiritual desire, so to fulfill that. Once somebody was asking, they were in South. There were, you know, some of our preachers who were doing some research work were talking with some of the big pundits down South. I think they may have been talking with the head vijaya of Sri Rangam, because the at that time it would have been the father, now it's the son. He's from what we know. He was very, very favorable. And so then, that's in the family of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, like that. Coming down, I think, from... I'm not sure if it's... Because Gopal Bhatta Goswami... Yeah, Venkata Bhatta. Yeah, I mean, that was the name. We saw him.
Venkata Bhatta is Gopal Bhatta's father.
Oh, okay. But we saw with those Pujari. We went there. So then, I think it's Venkata Bhatta's brother. I think it's a line coming down, possibly from... the brother is Prabodhananda Saraswati. Maybe his line, or there's something. Because Gopal Bhatta, he didn't get married, so it can't be. It's not direct. It's the family, but it's somehow. So then he was. They were just doing some discussion about the mantras, and he asked, you know, what mantras we're using. And when we said Kama Gayatri, then he says, "Oh, now I understand why. You know, possibly, what could be a reason why you have so many sannyasis falling." He says, because if the attitude's not right, then the mantra will take it the other way.
I have the same experience speaking with someone in Sri Rangam.
Yeah.
And he said, and also, because for them the pancha samskara is so important. So then, do you do pancha samskara? Yes, but it comes in this form, in this shape. Oh, very good. Which mantras do you chant? And then so I hesitatingly told him, this Gopal mantra and then this Kama Gayatri. You know, you should be very careful with that.
Yeah, it seems that everybody's very careful about that mantra.
And then he said the ladies? And I said, yeah, they chanted as well. And then he said, you just have to think of Prabhupada's lotus feet and then chant it. Because he said, you know, I'm thinking it's something like Ramanuja got the mantra Om Namo Narayanaya and then went to the temple tower and shouted it out to everyone. So only by his mercy can people chant it and get the benefit. But if they're not chanting that mantra through him or with his mercy, then they'll get all the sinful reactions described in the Vedas. So I think the same is with you, just because Prabhupada gave it to you, so then by his mercy you will get the benefit, but without his mercy all the reactions that are there, they'll just come down on your head.
Because they'll be described also, all these mantras will be described, because they're all there in the, I think the Narayana Upanishad, no, Taittiriya Upanishad, in the Narayana Bali, the last section, I think all the Gayatris are explained there. So then it will be open, because Karmakandis will also use the mantras, you know, for their various, you know, devatas and purposes, whatever they want. So then, specifically for them, all these reactions are there, because they want a particular pious benefit, but if they don't really, you know, pay the price of that perfect, you know, concentration in sadhana, then they'll get all kinds of mundane reaction, because they want mundane benefit. They're just like it's said that we discussed before about the why there's the two opinions on the grihastha ashram is the best of the sannyas. Mm. So someone who is interested in fruit of action, then grihastha ashram, they must go through it. So therefore you have to focus on that. Otherwise they might avoid it, because they're thinking, I don't want anything here, so therefore I'll just remain brahmachari and then at the end of life go to the heavenly planets. But then you may please the rishis, but you're not doing the worship of the demigods where you're going, and you're not worshiping the forefathers who are also there, and by their grace you have the body you have now. You're in that line. So therefore, without getting married, you wouldn't be able to please those two. So if you're going to go there and enjoy there for yourself, but not pay for it by pleasing them, because they have to live there also, so you have to feed them through the yagyas and the shraddhas, then it's selfish, and so therefore then you'll go to hell. But for the devotee, because he's not going to heavenly planets, then that rule doesn't apply. They could go their whole life and not be married, you know. So therefore you also have that aspect, is that the Gayatris for those who have material purposes definitely will give all those reactions, go to hell, this, that. Then for those who are interested in Vaidhi, also they have to be careful, because the whole point is Vaidhi means you do it perfectly. So you're fully Krishna conscious, but through the medium of the Vaidhi. But because of the element of the spontaneous devotional service, then things are lightened a bit, but it still doesn't mean that some aspect doesn't come. You know, the subtle aspects, the rising of material desires and all those things. So one has to be careful, because we can say, well, we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care, but that's, we can say that we can get by with that when it's on Kirtaniya Sadahari, right? So that means that we've already, you know, humbler than a blade of grass, tolerant as a tree, always respecting others, not expecting for ourselves, like that. At that stage, you can always chant. Then you could start to say, I don't have to worry as much about these rules, like that, because you're already always chanting, so the perfection of the rules has been attained, you know, or is in that process. But if we're endeavoring ourselves for material benefits and wealth and prosperity, you know, and nice family relationships and all that, then to that degree we have to be careful when we're chanting. Otherwise it may increase. The main thing is we don't want to scare anybody, but you know, people should be conscious that these are serious things, you know. That's the thing, is that material world is a serious place. You do an activity, you'll get a reaction. Same way as you do spiritual activities, you can get great spiritual benefit, or you can get some other reactions. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there must be has to be a balance.
Next, he says, the Brahmins are the best of the social classes. The Brahmana duty is to chant the Gayatri Mantra, and the Sannyasi's duty is to renounce other duties. However, all these duties are temporary. All these duties are praised by the Dharma Shastra, and they are good for some spiritual aspirants. Still, they are not in any way equal to the eternal duties of the soul. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.10 explains, The Brahman has all 12 of the Brahminical qualifications, as they are stated in the book called Sanat-Sujata, but is not a devotee and is averse to the lotus feet of the Lord. He is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog-eater, but who has dedicated everything, mind, words, activities, wealth, and life, to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than such a brahmana, because the devotee can purify his whole family, whereas the so-called brahmana, in a position of false prestige, cannot purify even himself. Now, here also it says the devotee who is a dog eater doesn't mean he's still eating dogs.
Mm.
You know, it means he's from that kind of a social background. And then he takes up devotional service. So therefore he gives these things up. You know, he's no longer a dog eater, but he's a Vaishnava.
What is the definition of a devotee?
Of a devotee means he's taking up devotional process. You know, here it means it would be a someone who begins to practice sadhana bhakti. Like that. Like that. It means there must be some, I think basically in the definition, it would always mean someone who's a sampradayic devotee. Like we see the example of Magrari the hunter, or Valmiki, you know, or I think Benipol, the prostitute, Haridas Thakur.
Lakshahira.
Hmm?
Lakshahira.
What's her name? Lakshahira. So then, so in all these cases, you see that they came in contact with the bona fide spiritual master and surrendered. You know, and then they're called devotees. Well, if they believe in the Lord but don't follow any practice, then it's devotees, but at the same time, it's not, how do you say, the progress won't be so dynamic like that, because the sadhu sangha and the bhajana kriya, some faith is there, but these other aspects of devotional service that are essential, you know, as he mentioned here, is that things given by the Dharma Shastras are good, says for some spiritual aspirants, so specifically those who are conditioned where they have many material desires, they have the need for fulfilling material desires, then it's good. But it says they're in no way equal to the eternal duties of the soul. So you cannot compare one's household duties, even though they're done in Krishna consciousness, to chanting Hare Krishna, you know, associating with devotees, hearing Bhagavatam, living in the Dham, serving the deity. Because those are eternal nature of the soul. The other ones there, you know, because there is something behind it why one is in that position. One is trying to, basically, to erase, you know, the attachments that one has accumulated from time immemorial by the process. So because that desire is there, it doesn't have the same quality, you know, naturally. And because they're temporary, then that also then reduces the directness of it. It's devotional service because its duty is it purifies you of the attachments. So because that is you're purifying yourself of attachments to gain Krishna consciousness, therefore it's called it's called in pursuit of Krishna consciousness, so it's called Krishna consciousness. It's called bhakti. But that's what we meant before, there's the overlap. Means is you can call the cutting the sabji also as cooking. You know, the marketing also, you know, the serving, all this, you can call the whole thing. But at the same time, as technically it's only here. So technically from prana, that starts bhakti. And below that, it's forms of upliftment. Like that. But because it's in pursuit of it, therefore it's called. Yeah. Like that. So that's the overlap. So that's why sometimes it appears to say one thing and another time it's another. So here he's just being very, because he's talking to someone who is very attached to Varnashram and thinks that the Vaishnavas who are following Varnashram, you know, especially higher, are superior to those Vaishnavas who are not so well situated in the Varnashram system.
you know, meaning that someone who's a Brahmin is better situated than someone who's not. So, therefore, he's making it very clear and just cutting away those things to basically say is, therefore, he says, for some spiritual aspirants. You know, he's just cutting it down to size. It doesn't mean it's not used. It just means that since someone is overemphasizing it, it has to be cut back to the middle. And so that's why sometimes he's being very... He's not giving... It's there, but it's not given great... how do you say?
Emphasis.
Yeah, emphasis or importance, yeah. Like that. It's not given. While if at other point times, it may be given great importance, because if you have a conditioned soul who wants to elevate themselves, then this is going to be very much part of it. So then, you know, the Varnashram system and the Panchara will be given great emphasis. But in this case, because he's trying to correct this person's, you know, improper view of devotional service by, you know, thinking that he... And the only reason he's emphasizing, because he's in that position. He was not a Brahmin, then he probably wouldn't emphasize. He'd just do his duties and get along with devotional service. Because he's a Brahmin from a good background and all that. Therefore, he's, for his own prestige, is pushing the point.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Mm-hmm.
You said that he was born in a family of dog eaters means he's not a dog eater. I'm thinking of that story of the prostitute and the Brahmana who lived next to each other.
That's one. That's another thing. We're talking about eating dogs. Because it means because it's like that's means not to. Technically, even if they have faith in the Lord, and that then will be something purified, but at some point it will need to be given up.
Mm-hmm.
Because, how you say, even though it's an occupation, the one is violence, it disturbs other living entities. That's why then we see is that especially is going to disrupt devotional progress because of its nature of violence. And the root of violence comes back to envy. Then the root of that is we want to be God. So that's where that particular line is especially avoided, you know. You know, while intoxication and will, you know, or is our being bewildered or being illicit sex because one is into the material nature. Like this, one what has to understand also in this is that for prostitutes there's love and there's business. So it's not that it's for them sensual in the way of enjoyment. It's just business. Like that. So therefore it does kind of take a slightly different flavor. You know, it's not that they're a vishayi, completely absorbed in just enjoyment, like, you know, some materialistic person. It's just somehow or another that girl finds herself in that position to maintain herself. There's no one else to take care, and she's taken up this occupation. You know, but we don't hear of many such. We only hear of that one story. We don't hear of one more. You know, we hear of other prostitutes giving up their occupation. You know, like
Pingala,
this, that we hear. But you only hear this one. You know, like that. Because Krishna being what is it? What we say, Bhava Graha Janardana. So he can tell that she doesn't have any other means, but at the same time, she's fully surrendered. So she is sincere. But to say, oh, I could take this up, you know, I need a little money on the side, you know. So then, but that doesn't necessarily mean that one has that sincerity that girl had to get herself back to Godhead. But there is a difference, you know, between... So there is a difference. For them, it's just business, because you have to remember there's the element of the heart like a razor. So therefore, they, you know, they make the person feel that, you know, how you say, it's a very nice atmosphere. But for them, it's just another phase. you know, someone who gives money. You understand? So it's, mm-hmm. it's a very, it's kind of different than we would consider it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But at the same time, it's in no way a preferred or recommended position.
Sorry.
Yeah, okay. You know, and then from that end of the spectrum, then we're going to the 12 brahminical qualifications here are 1. Truthfulness. 2. Self-control. 3. Austerity. 4. Freedom from envy. 5. Modesty. 6. Tolerance. 7. Freedom from malice. 8. Sacrifice. 9. Charity. 10. Steadiness. 11. Hearing the Vedas. And 12. Observing vows. A Brahmana who possesses these 12 qualities should be honored by everyone in the world. However, if a Brahman has all these qualities but has no devotion for Lord Krishna, then that Brahmana is degraded. Even a devotee who is a dog-eater is better than such a Brahman. The meaning here is that the dog-eater referred to is a person who has taken birth in the dog-eater family, but by association with saintly persons becomes purified samskar. Because of that purification, engages in the eternal spiritual activities of the soul. A Brahman referred to here is a person who has taken birth in a Brahman family, but is averse to the eternal activities of the soul, and prefers to perform temporary material activities in their stead. Then such a Brahman, such a dog-eater, is better. Human beings in the material world are of two kinds, 1, the intelligent, and 2, the unintelligent. Makes it quite simple. The material world is filled with unintelligent human beings. Intelligent human beings are rare. Makes it even more easy. Among such unintelligent persons, the Brahmanas are the best. Okay, now we're talking here. You know, and all this thing, you know, no one wants to be the shudras. Like, you know, we're talking in a system for unintelligent people. And thus the duties of the Brahman, such as their chanting the Gayatri Mantra, are the best of these kind of duties. Intelligent person is a synonym for the word Vaishnava. The activities of the Vaishnavas and the activities of unintelligent persons are inevitably very different. However, the teachings of the Vaishnavas and the teachings of the unintelligent followers of the Smriti Shastras, the so-called Smartas, are not really opposed to each other. The teaching of the scriptures are always in harmony with each other. Intelligent persons accept the scriptures as their friends. They do not think that the different duties described in the scriptures have different purposes in the end. The duties prescribed in the scriptures for unqualified persons are indeed different from the duties prescribed for the intelligent. Still, these different activities have the same purpose at their root. For the unintelligent, the scriptures prescribe temporary duties as most appropriate. However, temporary duties are all imperfect, horrible, contaminated, and short-lived. So this point here, the teaching of the scriptures are always in harmony with each other. Though the persons following it, then they may or may not be. That's the difficulty. Is that they may understand, it may not, but the purposes are the same. Is that they're both trying to connect one back, purify us of the material, how you say, material contamination. We see is that as roots, all of this is all is, you know, that we accept authority. Instead of considering ourselves the authority, that means then we take what the scriptures say as opposed to what we may come up with. Then there's cleanliness, because in the spiritual world everything is pure. Pure meaning always in connection with Krishna. The material world is contaminated. It's in connection with our own materialistic desires. So the process of cleanliness, the externals of it, then help purify to bring us to the subtler platforms, to where we take on actual purity of you know, transcendental desire. So, yeah, also all these qualities we see. Let's go back here. Yeah, truthfulness. The real truth is that Krishna is in control. We're not. Truth is the spiritual activities are real, material activities are not. So, truthfulness then means
discriminating between what is the path for engaging the material energy as given by God and that which is not. You know. So, but then you take it to the next step, and the truthfulness takes on the character of what is sat, what is spiritual, and what is material. So then that comes there. Self-control. Then we control the senses to keep us from engaging in sinful activities, engaged in pious activities, which are then given by the Lord as more proper, more elevated. Same time as the real self-control then will be is that the self is engaged in Krishna's service. Right? Here we're having to restrain things we don't want to do. But there it's that we're doing things that we should be doing. So that's the two. So one's in the negative, the other's in the positive. Like you're engaged in spiritual, you know, that's truthfulness. While the material, you know. Then freedom from envy. But then here it means that we don't envy others and bother others and all these things. And may also come under... Yeah, so that will also be violence, freedom from violence. That will be the grossest. Next, subtler will be envious of others. Subtler than that, then will be envious of, you know, the demigods and all that, and then it goes up until it gets to Krishna. And we're also envious of the soul. It means that we're serving the Krishna, and we don't like that. We want to be God, so we're actually envious of the position. You know, and so therefore then violence is done by not surrendering to the Lord. So modesty is that one is, you know, doesn't one has qualities but one doesn't advertise or project. So the same way as that's on the material platform, because qualities come from Krishna. Same time the spiritual, then those are coming by the grace of Krishna and the other acharyas and devotees. So therefore we see it's their qualities. So then does that make some sense? So we see is that there's no contradiction, but there is a totally therefore. But we see as he says it's very different because the approach is very different. But at the same time, as the scriptural rules are basically the same. There's no contradiction in them. But how one's following it, the purpose one's following it is very different. One is following to get out of the material world. And the other one is following to stay in the material world. Therefore, then, so many details of rules will be different. You know, as we discussed before, the karmis, they have the five debts have to be paid by the Vedic process. While for the devotees, the five debts are paid by the process of devotional service. Because Krishna is the forefather. Krishna is the potency of the devas. Krishna is the ability in man. You know, Krishna is the dependence. Krishna is the, you know, all, whatever is there, it's Krishna. So by worshipping him, all those potencies that come down to those five positions then are taken care of. Because if you please him, naturally then you please those who are simply, you know, just very small aspects of his potency.
Why does Krishna mention to Uddhava in the 11th canto that this Panchayagya must be performed by a Grihastha?
Yes, it must be performed. So he has to be aware of all these five. So therefore he has to be, it means for the demigod, he has to be worshipping the deities. You know, so for us that means the Pancharatric system. The sages must be respected. So they must be studying the scriptures and respecting Vyasadeva's works and the previous acharyas, like that. The forefathers must be respected, so therefore the acharyas in the line and the legacy that they've left us, that must be respected. You know? And same time as, yeah, okay. Then for the and of humans and the Brahmins, and then the dependents, because Grihasi has to take care of his dependents. And then for the Bhutas, then he has to understand that there's the subtleties and the, you know, means that there's all kinds of, how you say? Yeah, sometimes it's taken as that, sometimes it's taken as dependent, sometimes it's taken as the selves. Mm. Yeah, that different definitions. So he must basically just take care of the aspects of devotional service as is given by the acharya. So he must be aware. So the whole idea is to become conscious, and then you can become Krishna conscious. Otherwise, then someone just says, "Well, you know, I'm a devotee, and I'm doing everything right." But are they? They're in the house. They're not worship. If they're not worshiping the deities in the house, they're not coming to the temple. You know, like that. Then okay, they could say, "Well, I'm chanting," but then how important is the chanting? Do they just kind of work it in, you know, on the way to work, or do they chant much, or, you know, how does it, you know, is it obvious in their process? Because then if the holy name is the deity, then it would show in their quality of chanting and these kind of things. You know, are they respecting the scriptures? Do they study them? Do they respect the acharyas? Do they respect the devotees, the Vaishnavas? Are they actually taking care of the family member? You know, just you'd have to see if that's actually going on. Otherwise, you might find it's not. So they need to be conscious of what it means. Otherwise, it's not just a game. You know, if they don't understand what it means and don't know what they're getting themselves into, then better they don't bother, because otherwise then others will get bothered. You know? Because if you're on your own, then you can only really create trouble for yourself, you know. But if you're married, then you can create trouble for, you know, so many, you know, dependents and all that. So that's the big thing. Does that make any sense?
A very nice explanation. Thank you. Sometimes that bhuta is translated, understood as bhuta, like adibhuti. Means the other living entities that...
Yeah, it could be also all the dogs and this and that. So it seems to be that there's how you say, kind of like manifold
applications.
Yeah, applications and definitions.
The universe.
Yeah, so the basic, you know, basic thing is that's the framework of it, and then how it works is in so much. You know, you have the modes of nature, but then there's modes how they apply in the subtle body, in the gross body, in medicine, in this and that. You know, so many ways you can apply it. So depending upon its application, it'll be kind of be seen from a different angle. You know, in Ayurveda, it'll become mucus, bile, and air. You know, like that. You know, so it's the same thing.
Human being? No, we already went through this, intelligent and unintelligent. That's also a very interesting thing about that. Intelligent and unintelligent. You know, then one thing, yes, Brahman, we're intelligent. So of the unintelligent, then the Brahman is the top. So intelligent means Vaishnava, a devotee. And unintelligent means one who is not a devotee. So of those, then the Brahman is the top. Like that. And of the Brahminical activities, and basically chanting Gayatri for them. For us, that means chanting the holy name, because that is the closest they get to chanting the holy name. Like that. That's their japa. It means for us, we chant Hare Krishna japa, and the Gayatri is, we do a little bit of it. But in the Vedic Brahmana, then he sits down and chants 1,008 Brahma Gayatris. So they'll spend, you know, hour to whatever it is that it takes to do that. So that, therefore, that is their japa. They don't have another japa. Like that, only the Pancharatrik, then it introduces these others, and then the Bhagavat brings in the Lord's holy name. And that means the primary names. Like that. Like that. Well, then it would be formalized in the form of mantras, you know, that expand from Kama Gayatri. And then the Vedic, that is an expansion of that. Hmm?
That's interesting. These temporary duties are not the same as direct spiritual duties. Temporary duties may be accepted when they follow the spiritual path. Then they help one to attain the spiritual nature. When the means does not lead to the goal, the means should be rejected. Therefore, the means is not complete in itself. It's merely a part, a separate fragment of what will be the final goal. Therefore, temporary duties are not complete. For example, a Brahmin chanting Gayatri, like his other duties as well, is subjected to various rules and meant to be performed only at certain specified times. All these are not manifested from the soul's natural spiritual activities. However, after many days of following such rules, a person may become purified by associating with saintly Vaishnavas. Then he develops a liking for the spiritual holy name of Lord Hari. At that time, he does not continue other activities, such as the chanting of Gayatri. Chanting the holy name of Lord Hari is the perfect spiritual activity. The chanting of Gayatri and other like activities are only various means to attain the goal, which is the chanting of Lord Hari's holy names. Therefore, these activities are not the final perfection. Saintly persons teach that these temporary duties, while honorable in themselves, are still imperfect, horrible, contaminated, and short-lived. I think that's the name of the chapter. Temporary, imperfect, horrible, and contaminated. I think it was that's how the translation goes. The spiritual truth is the final goal, because they bring one into contact with matter and materialists. Temporary duties are horrible for the individual souls. Temporary duties are very material. Temporary duties bring with them many irrelevant results. The individual soul naturally attains these results. Even though he does not wish these petty results, he cannot escape them. So what of these material duties, you know, these pious duties, varnashram and that are in line with the devotional path, those are accepted. Those that aren't are not taken. It means the activity should get you a result. So if the result doesn't get you devotion, then it shouldn't be followed. It's not an important aspect. So then the working principle of that is, by chanting that nicely, one becomes purified, so one can appreciate or even have the sincerity to want to attain the association of Vaishnavas. And then in that saintly association, then one takes up the chanting of the holy name. So then here it says, it does not continue other activities, such as the chanting of Gayatri. So for us, that doesn't mean that the Gayatri mantra itself is not chanted. It means it's not the japa. It means the japa is the holy name. And then it becomes a minor part, because they have a whole thing, the Sandhyavandana. Then there's about, before they start chanting, there's about 10 minutes of mantras and ritual that must be done to get the effectiveness in the chanting of the Gayatri. So those things then are done first, then there's the chanting, then afterwards then there's other, you know, rituals that are done after the chanting of the Gayatri. So all that is not necessary, you know. It should be, you know, there's so many restrictions on it, and that where one can chant, when one can chant, one's condition, one's in when one chants, one's purity, all these. So therefore, then, as a ritual, Sandhyavandana then becomes reduced down to just a central point of just chanting the mantra itself. And that, you know, just the Brahma Gayatri is for the purpose of freeing one from material conditioning. That's its purpose.
Yeah. He's saying the difficulty with the material activities is they bring one in contact with materialists. You know, if one's a grihastha and let's say one's doing business, it will bring one in contact with materialistic people. Yeah. Or many times for the Brahmin, he performs those duties, but then the people who want samskars done or yagyas and that, then are materialistic. You know, so in this way they come in contact
like that. They perform their duties of begging like that. That brings them in contact with materialistic people. So all these different things, that's a problem. They come in contact. So therefore it's not considered as wonderful as the association, devotional, direct devotional activities done in the association of Vaishnavas. So that's always considered the, that is the nature of the soul. So those are always the, those should always be emphasized. You know? So therefore the spiritual activities done in the association of the devotees, ideally in the holy dham, these things, worship, you know, in connection with the deity, and according to the you know, the Bhagavat scriptures, then that is, those are always preferred. Then, taking care of those as well as one can, then one does the other activities.
Temporary duties are short-lived. The soul's temporary duties are not performed in all situations and all times. For example, a Brahman is Brahman nature, a Kshatriya is Kshatriya nature, and other like natures also are manifest because of a particular cause. When the cause ceases to be, these natures vanish. A person may in one birth be a Brahman, in the next birth an outcast. Therefore the duties of the Brahman caste are temporary. They are not the original duties of the soul. Therefore in reference to temporary duties, the phrase "own duty" is only a figure of speech. That is why in every birth the soul's own duty changes. However, in none of these births does the soul's eternal duty ever change. This eternal duty is the soul's true own duty. Temporary duties are all short-lived.
We see that basically in most presentations of Varnashram, Prabhupada makes is that it will, he'll start by establishing, you know, human life is better than non-human. So that means taking up inquiry, taking up varnashram. But once that is established, then we see immediately, then Prabhupada starts talking about the duties of the soul. He immediately starts talking about the nature of the soul as servant. You know, and one would think, well, why is he talking this? Why is he not talking about the duties of the Brahman, the Kshatriya? Because those are actually temporary duties. Because our mental state, therefore we've created the situation for ourselves. So then one is in a particular body that has a particular nature. But that may change from birth to birth. That is the thing. So the eternal duties, one's own duty, then the swadharma is the nature of the soul. That is the what is the soul's service to God. But these others, because we identify with the body, then we call it swadharma. It's the duty of this body, gross and subtle body. Because we identify with it, they say it's mine. But it's just the duty of that body. You know, just like the duty of the table is to hold things up. But the problem is it doesn't mean that it doesn't hold things up, even if we're Krishna conscious. But but it goes very easily because we don't identify the table as ourselves. But the body and subtle body, we have a tendency to identify as ourselves. Therefore, then we will call those duties our duty. Or we may, because we identify with all our possessions, there say these are ours, so therefore then we get involved. So all that's attachment. But so we see is that the advanced devotees, then they can still perform all these temporary duties. It's just like you have something in possession, you take care of it and use it in the way that its natural duty is. Same way the gross and subtle body is also dealt with in its natural way. Like that. Does that make sense? So therefore, it's not own duty anymore. It's the duty of the body. It's the duty of the subtle body. Someone's a brahminical, gross and subtle body. It's their duty to do particular activities. Since it's in the possession of the soul has to engage its possessions in the Lord's service. And you engage it according to the nature of the thing. You use a table as a table. You know, you don't use it for another purpose, you know, like that. So then, yeah, that makes sense. So it just shifts from being a possession to being yourself. So for the Vaishnav, Swadharma means serving Krishna. And he serves Krishna with his body, mind, and words, and his possessions, his life. So his possessions happens to be this body, so he uses that. Like that. So it'll look basically the same, but any duties that aren't connected with advancement, those are dropped. Any of the temporary duties that don't help in the pursuit of gaining Krishna's favor, they're dropped. And those that are in line with devotional activities are favorable, and those are kept. And it becomes good.
Actually, we've seen from the Buddha Gita that also applies in terms of deity worship, that it's really recently that for as long as we don't have awareness that Krishna is really in the heart of everyone, then we should have a deity worship. But then when we understand that Krishna deities everyone, then we can cut back the deity worship and concentrate more on Shri Krishna.
Can, but it's just what it means, but the deity is also in the deity. You know, that's the thing, is that we have to be careful of that aspect, because that's the impersonalists have that concept. God is everywhere, but somehow or another he's not in the deity. It means if you can find God everywhere, respect him everywhere, you should also be able to find him and respect him in the deity form. But that's the one place where God isn't, you know. So one has to be careful, because we see the Goswamis, they engaged in deity worship, they had their deities, and they were engaged. So it's not a problem, because the point is in the spiritual world, that's what one is going to be engaged in also, is deity worship. One is going to be chanting Krishna's name all the time. He's going to be in the association of the devotees. He's going to be always hearing about the Lord's glories. He's going to be worshipping the deity, but there the deity is Swayam Krishna rather than an archa expansion. And he'll be living in the holy dham, because that's where Krishna stays. So those will always continue. So it's not it depends upon the individual if they have a preference for worshipping the deity, or more of a preference for chanting, or for both.
I was thinking a bit more subtly in terms of there are different ways that you can worship the deity. Like, my understanding was that if you are recognizing the deity within the four living entities, then the deity is very high pleased.
Yes.
So the deity worship may become simplified because of your level of consciousness, the deity will be pleased to end.
Depends what you mean by simplified.
I don't mean going against rules and things.
Yeah, but simplified means it's just like. It depends upon what you're simplifying. It means the Purvanga karmas, those can be simplified. It means all the preliminary activities before you start the deity worship. But the actual worship itself generally is not simplified. You know, because you would do all the things, bathe him and dress him and put tilak and offer, you know, the flowers and scents and garlands and, you know. And so all that would stay. But it's just all the activities to get you to that point. Basically, you would just do achman, respect the guru, respect Gauranga, and then worship the deity, rather than, let's say, installing the bell and installing the conch and doing all these other activities. So that way it could be reduced. If it's your own personal worship, temple worship doesn't matter. It's always done in that same, whatever's the standard, that's what's done. But that can be reduced. But we see that if you look at like the Parati of Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he gives simplified worship. Basically, within one page, he's already on the deity worship. But the deity worship itself, he's going through all 16 items and everything like that. So the 16 items are done fully. And even sometimes technical points within those are done. You know, like offering a garland after eating. Chandan, garland, spices for chewing, pan, you know, a place to rest, all these things. So for one person, it's vaidhi. So there's so many rules of vaidhi, you know. But for someone who is more spontaneous, then we see is that they also appreciate doing all those things. So the only thing that changes is actually the purvanga karmas. Really. That's that's it. Because otherwise, as we see, is that the best of everything is also offered to Krishna in Goloka. You know, so whatever one has, whatever your means, still offer the best. So that essential point. That's why those five are considered from the path of Raganuga. Like that, there is then aspects are tacked onto it to make it Vaidhi. You know, so the pancharatric system has both. The essence of it is the rag, but at the same time it has the Vaidhi, just to ensure that the standards and the purification, the progressiveness is there. So that's the element. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. So I think we'll end here. So 6:15. Today is what? Monday?
Monday.
Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki
jai.
Jai Jai Guru Prabhupada.
Hari Hari Bol.
Hari Hari.